We're good. All right. Josh Showman, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So for voters who don't know you, give us the quick story. Who are you and why are you running for governor?
Well, the 60-second version is I'm a Christian first. I'm the son of a minister. My dad's ministry was in mostly northeastern Wisconsin. My mother, she was a registered nurse. My wife and I have been married almost 25 years, both Wisconsin kids. We raised our family mostly in Washington County, and we now have an 80-acre farm in between West Bend and Grafton. Love Wisconsin through and through, aside from a tour of duty in Iraq in 2003, and I always joke a tour of duty in the Chicagoland suburbs while I was getting my master's degree at Northern Illinois. I'm a Wisconsin kid, and been back working in public service my whole life, dedicated it to the service and sacrifice of the guys and gals who didn't make it back, and reflecting the Lord's love by loving my neighbor as myself in public service the last 12 years in Washington County.
So is there a single issue that would define you, or maybe a lane within the Republican Party that helps define you?
Yeah, I think people-driven, being very people-focused, and mostly interested in solving problems. That's why I got into public service. I actually started in public administration because I thought politics was a little too volatile and too theoretical. Public administration is really where the rubber hits the road and you're dealing with people where they're at. My first job back in Wisconsin was deputy clerk treasurer in Princeton, Green Lake County, and I ended up taking on responsibilities in public works, literally shoveling out lift stations. So, you know, I think those are important things, making sure when you flush the toilet, it does what it's supposed to do and the garbage is collected on time. And to this day, that's who I am as Washington County Executive and who I will be as governor.
How much money do you think you're going to need to raise to win this primary? And then what happens after that in a general election?
Yeah, I mean, it's embarrassing the fact that this is probably a $250 million race all in for both sides and all the outside spending and just the candidate alone, I'm told, about basement floor, $20 million, first floor, probably closer to $40 million. So it's a serious endeavor and one that we're excited about.
When it comes to a competitive primary, where do you personally draw the line between negative campaigning versus just defining the differences between yourself and an opponent?
Well, I think when it gets personal, that's really the dividing line. There's certainly differences on our side of the aisle. There's only two of us in this race right now. And there's certainly differences between policy approach. I think those are important to point out, and I think that's the essence of the primary process. But once it becomes personal attacks, I mean, I think that's where we've seen primaries in the past go awry, and I have no intention of going down that lane, and I hope the door swings both ways.
For voters who aren't aware of the candidates, should they be looking at which candidate has the closest issues to them or general electability?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, first and foremost, I think this has got to be about the people and local communities, a little bit more about Washington County type and a little less about Washington, D.C. But then I also think there's something to be said about the types of attributes it's going to take to win a general election. Generals are, of course, much different than primaries, I think, on the Republican side in particular. We've spent a little bit too much time focusing on who can win a primary, purity tests of sorts, and we need to spend more time thinking about what can win in the general election. I think when you put my resume next to anybody, I think the answer is clear. If we want to be in the governor's mansion in January of 2027, I think not only me, but my profile and our campaign is the type that wins.
This is an interesting contrast because we have the northern Wisconsin, which is kind of the new prime territory in Wisconsin for Republicans, versus the old guard, the WOW counties, which obviously you represent. So how do you view that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the main contrasts, north versus south. I think there's certainly a generational difference, but I also think it's, you know, local and personal versus kind of state and D.C., Madison and Washington, D.C. I think those are basically the dividing lines, and I think it's a good contrast for people to really wrestle with what's best for us to choose in August to put up in November for the best shot to have the governor's mansion in January.
How do you think Donald Trump will impact this race?
Oh, huge. I mean, you know, it's the president's party, and you know, that's been clear for the last 10 years. But I think one thing to keep in mind is President Trump came on the scene in 2015 after the 2010 Tea Party wave. Republicans basically ran on three major points: reduce the debt, eliminate deficits, and repeal and replace Obamacare. Here we are 15 years later, and we're still talking about those three things. Sometimes President Trump seems like he's the only one pushing the needle on any of those by himself. That's unacceptable. And I think it's why we continue to feel a churn in politics across America. So he's got a humongous impact. I certainly am going to work my tail off to earn his support and endorsement and show him that, you know, he can have the confidence in me that I've got this race once we get past August and we lead it to victory in November.
What's your view on tariffs and his tariff policy?
Well, I think there's a complete economic reorder happening right now all across the globe. I think President Trump sees tariffs as a lever to be able to guide that reorder in a way that benefits America in the long term and, quite frankly, the Western Hemisphere. You know, I'm willing to be patient, as I've talked to a number of farmers and manufacturers in Washington County and now all across the state to see that play out. But it's waning patience. You know, this economy has been tough. It's particularly hitting people who are making less than six figures. And I'm excited to see the results, and I think they're coming very, very soon.
As governor, there's a good chance that you would have a Republican legislature behind you. What would you like to see as AB1, the first bill you can sign into law?
Well, I think there's a laundry list, and that's part of our challenge. But one of the things that I want to see first is things that are focused on affordability, property taxes and income taxes in particular. It's embarrassing to me that our top bracket of income tax is almost double what Illinois is. I'd like to see it flattened out and then slowly eliminated. And then property taxes, I'd like to see us go from four or five entities on property tax bills down to two or three. The goal of cutting them by 50%. You make a moonshot, and if you hit the stratosphere, you've won.
So there's also a chance that Democrats could hold one of the chambers. What's your history of working across the aisle?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a chance, but this is why it's important to have the best player on the field for the Republican side to make it most likely that not only do we have the governor's mansion, but we also hold the Senate and the Assembly. In the event we don't, I think this has been one of the things I've been most critical of recently, is the lack of communication between the East Wing and the legislative branches both. I mean, look back to the state budget process. The Democrat minority leader is critical of the Democrat governor for not even giving her a seat at the table in the conversation about the budget. You know, Greta Neubauer and I probably don't agree on a whole lot. One thing we do agree on is everybody should have a seat at the table. 90% of things we probably disagree, but there's probably going to be one or two where I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. How do we get to yes? And there's a laundry list of things that we need to talk to each other on, whether it's funding for schools and the funding formula being broken, funding for a prison system which has been broken for 50 years, the transportation fund that was raided by Governor Doyle and needs to get fixed, and doing it in a way that is effective for people and makes things more affordable. All of those things are things we need to work together on.
The Public Service Commission is looking at a large number of utility rate hikes. Data centers are looking popping up all across the state. What's your view of data centers and this issue going forward?
Well, I think we don't know enough, and that's one of the scariest parts about this process. I've got one popping up about 10, 15 miles from my house in Port Washington. The transmission lines that are going to come through are about 2 miles from my house. I know it firsthand from talking to my neighbors. You know, I'm very concerned. It's predominantly power driven, power distribution and power supply. You know, I grew up middle school and high school in Kewaunee, 10 minutes down the road from the old nuclear power plant that's now being decommissioned. That is the essential energy solution. Why we're not talking about it, while right here on the Madison campus, we have the number three school in the country for nuclear engineering. We should be leading the way. I think we need to slow down the conversation about data centers with a goal, create goals for how we become the forefront of AI and data centers in Wisconsin and the forefront of the energy revolution, which I believe starts with nuclear.
What would you like to see happen with public education? Does it need more funding? Does it need an overhaul?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was a school board president in Hartford, and it's near and dear to me. My oldest son graduated from Hartford Union High School. My youngest son is on a special needs scholarship voucher at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School. So I'm a huge believer in universal school choice for every parent, but that funding formula for public schools needs to be reformed. It's from the 1970s. It's almost 50 years old. At that time, and then in the 90s when Governor Thompson tried to reformulate it, unfortunately unsuccessfully, our student population was growing, imminently growing. Now we're looking at the next 25 years, it's going to be declining precipitously, not to mention the outcomes, which aren't great either. So I think we need to get all the players at the table, school boards, superintendents, parents, homeschoolers, voucher schools, all around the discussion and say, how do we leverage these dollars best and make it best for outcomes for our kids? As soon as it becomes about our kids and not about bureaucracy or institutions or winners and losers, no more zero-sum games. It's got to be about our kids and the future of the state of Wisconsin. It's going to be one of the things I'm laser-like focused on, but it's not going to happen quickly. We've gotten 50 years to be to this point. We're not going to solve it in 50 days or 50 weeks.
What would you like to see happen with vouchers and the voucher program?
I certainly think it needs to be expanded, but I don't like the talk about money following the kid. My concern with that is kids become a commodity. What do we do with commodities? We buy, sell, and trade them. I don't think that's the solution. I think there needs to be some kind of baseline funding where all of our schools have some reliability in their funding and sustainability fiscally. And then everything, I think there needs to be an outcome based. How are kids doing better? When kids do better, schools do better, whether it's public, private, homeschooling, charter schooling, all of those things, virtual schooling. That's why it's a complicated issue that I think we need to be thoughtful and pragmatic about.
What is the number one tax reform you'd like to see happen?
The very first thing I'd like to see is property tax reform. And it's hard for me to take property taxes and income taxes and separate them. So I would say they go hand in hand, frankly. I don't think you can separate one from the other. Our grandparents leaving to go down to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, Arizona, we got to stop that bleeding. And our young people leaving because they can't afford to live here or the opportunity at a new job or a new business, that too. So I guess in the end, I would say property taxes and income taxes together. They both have to be solved.
Over the course of the last year, we've seen the Supreme Court eliminate a lot of legislative oversight over the rulemaking process. Would you like to see reforms? Do you think there's a bipartisan solution there?
I do think there's a bipartisan solution. I actually think there needs to be a constitutional amendment with regard to the governor's veto. With what happened with that 402-year veto, I think that's problematic. I think the legislative branch definitely has an important role and responsibility. I've experienced that firsthand as an executive myself at the county level. I respect it. And I would respect it at the state level. There's a lot of work for us to do in that regard. And in the last 6.5 years, I think a lot of eroded trust on both sides that needs to be repaired.
You obviously have experience at the county level. What would you like to see happen with funding for local government?
Well, we made a step with shared revenue. I was proud to be a part of leading that as president of the Executives and Administrators Association with the counties, but it was a step. Right, it was a big step, the first in about 40 years, almost my whole life, but it was just a step. We need now one giant leap for mankind. I think that's how you actually solve the property tax issue. I mean, look at all the people coming from Chicago on the east side of our state, Minneapolis on the west and northwest part of our state, that aren't really contributing a heck of a lot when you think about it. Our sales tax is relatively low and we're not capturing nearly enough from those folks. I think it's a huge part of the solution. There's got to be some reliability in that fiscal model for municipalities, but huge reform opportunity, and I'm proud of the step we took, and now we got to take a much bigger leap.
Right now in northern Wisconsin, there are exploratory drilling projects for potential mines in the future. Do you think that Wisconsin's current mining laws are tough enough, or do you need to have any changes?
I think there definitely need to be changes. I mean, look at our flag. Mining is our heritage. I think we've gone too far away from it. I think there's plenty of opportunity and probably agreement, frankly, on both sides that there's smart ways to do this. But I do think there's giant opportunity area, particularly in the northern part of the state, and they're desperate for jobs. So I think there is opportunity, and it's something that I'm excited to work together with the other side.
Have you had any concerns about your own safety in this modern political environment?
When Charlie was assassinated, that was the first time. I talked to my wife long and hard about this decision to jump into the race, and she's a talker, normally hard to get a word in edgewise, but she took a pause and said, well, it can't be worse than Iraq, and that was the moment we decided to get in. When Charlie was assassinated, that was the first time that I had second thoughts, like, wow, this is very real. And of course, that goes across the spectrum, whether it was Governor Shapiro in Pennsylvania or the former speaker up in Minnesota. It's a scary time. I mean, we've got to bring the temperature down. I think part of the problem with politics in America and politics in Wisconsin is we just don't talk to each other. We talk past each other. We throw social media bombs. There's no conversation. I think we got to get back to talking to one another again. It's why I've gone to all 72 counties, and I'm on my second tour, about halfway through. We're Wisconsinites. We should be talking to each other. Americans first.
What is your plan for increasing affordable housing? Do you think it's regulations, is it density? What's the solution there?
Well, it's build, baby, build. We have choked off the ability for small homes on small lots, building just in general. I think it started back about 50 years ago when we started to tighten up how financing worked for local developers, and we completely choked it off after Dodd-Frank. At the same time, we went from post-World War II about 60 pages of zoning regulation to today, 6.5 inches of subdivision codes and comprehensive plans and zoning codes, and the list goes on. Regulation is massively a problem, and the not in my backyard attitude. I think we've got to loosen all of that up. I think you look to models like Montana and the Montana Miracle, where they're now building like crazy. This housing issue is a supply side problem. It's an old Ronald Reagan type supply side economics issue. We have to create the environment where we're making it possible for the opportunity at the American dream. To me, this is constitutional. This is declarational, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have solutions in Washington County that are moving the needle. We've got professors, we've got institutes from across the globe who are calling us and saying, what are you guys doing? It's something different's happening in Washington County. We can scale that up. It'll be a little different statewide, but we could scale that up statewide and make it a solution for everybody, give everybody a shot at the American dream in an affordable manner.
In the Department of Corrections, Governor Evers has a pretty massive overhaul plan. Would you carry that plan forward?
There's components of it that I like. What I don't like is opening the doors and letting people out. I think we need to get a much tougher on crime approach. I think it starts by electing Eric Toney. But I also believe we have to give law enforcement the resources they need, DA's offices and police departments alike. We've done way too much of that. I'd call it a slow roll in the city of Milwaukee in particular on defunding the police. Yeah, they haven't actually cut funding per se, but they've held funding flat, they've held positions open. We need to deploy as many resources as possible to local law enforcement and give them everything they need from local, state, to federal law enforcement. Know that they have, we have their back 110%.
On the topic of abortion, is there any changes you would like to see to state law?
I think our life culture is what has to change. I think we need to create a culture of life in Wisconsin. You know, now that the state Supreme Court has ruled, the bill that Governor Walker signed 20 weeks, I think it's a settled issue both here in the state and at the federal level in that regard. I think we need to focus on different things like making adoption cheaper than abortion. I think we need to make it such that child support starts at conception rather than waiting until birth. I think we need to give mothers resources all the way through the first year postpartum when need be. I think those types of reforms are what we as conservatives need to focus on so that we prove we're pro-life. This isn't just about anti-abortion.
All right, Josh Shulman, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you so much. We covered a lot of territory there.
All right.
That was good.
Thank you very much. Yeah, nice to meet you.
You too.
Congrats on the couple of deer, or a few deer.
You as